The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Good morning, Arkansas. This is Alan Kerr sitting in for Dave Elswick on the Dave Elswick Show. Hope everyone's had a great weekend. It's beautiful weather. I tell you, I don't think we could have asked for better weather. We've got a really good, really great lineup this morning for our show on this bright Monday morning. First off, right in our studio, we've got State Representative candidate Heather Turchie, and her district is the district she's running for is District 75 in West Little Rock, and we're going to talk about her. Her candidacy, her interview in the paper, and what sets her apart from her opponent. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. You got up and snuck out before the kids got you and that kind
right.
of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Bright and early.
I thought she was going to call in, but she showed up at the studio door, so we let her in. So tell everybody about your candidacy and kind of give them an idea of where your district is. And now, in full disclosure, this used to be my district. It used to be District 32. Mm-hmm. With the redistricting they changed it to 75. But it's the west end of Little Rock. I spent three terms in that district as state representative. But tell us how your campaign's going.
So far, so good. So I'm a small business owner. My husband and I, we own an architectural design company that's based out of Pulaski County. We've been in business for 45 years. We've done a lot of residential and commercial development in West Little Rock and all throughout Little Rock. The district lines, it goes all the way down to Brody Creek, Woodlands Edge, picks up some of Chenal Valley, Rock Creek, all the way out to Taylor Loop, and parts of Highway 10, the south side of Highway 10.
Well, the upside of that is it's easy to walk. I mean, they're house to house to house to house.
It is. Other than it's, you know, a mountain going up and down both ways.
Well, then there's those areas off of Henson that go straight up.
Yes.
I mean, have you noticed that you've gotten all your exercise in, walking these doors?
We're averaging about 13,000 steps a day. So,
thank God there wasn't something to count my steps when I ran for office. I don't think
it's motivation, though.
Because
I was aiming for 10,000, but you know, I'm hitting about 13,000, which is great.
13,000 steps, good Lord.
Unfortunately, I go home and eat a bunch of food afterwards, so it cancels it out.
Otherwise,
I'd be losing weight.
In order to get out there, you got to have calories to burn.
Right.
My goodness, you got to. You used to call the campaign is the perfect weight loss program. I'm telling you. So what's what are you hearing when you go out and go door to door, and what's your district? What are you hearing from them?
The biggest thing that I'm hearing is crime, and that's coming from both ends. That's coming from Republicans, Democrats, Independents, everyone that I knock on the door. They're wanting to fix crime. And the problem that we have right now is our parole system. You know, our state parole system, when hardened criminals are sentenced, they're only serving like a sixth of their sentence. Maybe.
Wow.
And what we're wanting to do is we're wanting to bring in the federal law, which would make them serve up to 80% of their sentence. So.
Wow. So if someone is given 6 years, they're going to serve about a year of it.
Right.
And
they know that.
Out.
And they know that. That's the first thing they ask is am I going to a state penitentiary or if I'm going to a federal. And they know if they're going to a state, it's going to be a vacation for them.
Wow.
So. and they're released back out in the streets, and they're committing crimes that are worse than what they were sentenced to in the first time.
Yeah, so. Three hots and a cot, and you know, get to work out in the workout room and watch TV. Goodness, So, what do we do about it?
Well, like I said, I think what we're going to have to do is we're going to bring in the federal law and make people serve 80% of their sentence instead of releasing them back out. But also, we're probably going to have a prison expansion. We just don't have the room. You know, our county jails and everyone, they are overflowing. So.
Right. Well, I mean, it's always been a social problem, but, you know, you got people out there who think, well, you need to address why the criminals are criminals.
Right. But we can address that when they're locked up instead of just out on the streets. And that's the thing that my opponent has done. You know, she's, you know, said over and over again about a mental health, which I'm in agreement with that. But right now, we can't address mental health because they're out there killing people. So we'll address it when they're locked up and then, you know.
Well, we've got a saying in the insurance business. If you've got a flood in your house and the water's everywhere, what's the first thing you do?
Right.
You shut the water off.
Right. Exactly.
You got to shut the water off. So we can try to save as many people as we can. We got to shut the killing off and we can address the core issues after we get our arms around that. So you got crime. Anything else out there? How about education?
Education's a big topic. You know, from what I'm hearing from a lot of people is that, you know, they want an option. They want options as to where their kids are going to school. And it's not that there's anything wrong with the public schools. It's just that, you know, a lot of the classrooms are at max capacity.
Right.
And I have a friend who teaches for Pulaski County Special School District, and she's a kindergarten teacher. She has like 23 kids or something like that in her classroom. And she said the majority of them are special needs kids. And she doesn't have the resources there to take care of those kids. And I was talking to her about school choice. And I said, well, you know, some of those kids might need other options as to go to a different school. But instead, they're stuck in that district because of that, what the zip code they're in or financial reasons they're stuck there.
Well, and there's the issue is that let's say that you've got half of your class is special needs, which in your case, what you're describing is actually more. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you're paying attention to the special needs kids, what happens to the ones that are not?
Right.
Okay, they're not getting as good an education. Right. They're not being challenged. They're not, you know.
And then they get in trouble.
Teacher's just one person. Right. They're getting in trouble. They're causing disruptions, things like that.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a good issue.
Smaller class sizes would be great, too, as well. My kids' school, and I'm not going to disclose where they go to school, but, you know, there's 15 kids in a classroom, first, second grade, which I think is a good size classroom.
Right.
The teacher gets more one-on-one time with those kids.
Well, should the money follow the child?
I think so.
I think so, too.
I
mean, goodness gracious, they're our children. It's our tax money.
Right.
We should have those choices.
Right.
We shouldn't have, you know, someone else tell us where our kids are going to get educated and how they're going to get educated.
That's right. And another thing, you know, if you look at it, if you had every child was getting a $7,000 or $8,000 tax credit and you had 15 kids in a classroom, you know, that teacher could make $100,000 a year. I mean, if you look at it, I mean, even if you were just paying them $50 a year, you took the other $50 to pay for curriculum and, you know, even renting the place, whatever. So,
good deal. Well, and you know, it's imperative. You only have one shot at educating your child.
That's right.
You know,
you
just one
do the
shot.
Best you
You're going to have to do the best you can.
Right.
It's tough enough for them.
And you talk about crime, you talk about the economy and everything, but everything boils down to education, in my opinion.
Right.
You know, if you're teaching a socialist agenda in the schools, they're not going to understand how our economy works. They're not going to understand why you need to be a business owner or why you need to work. They think that everything should be given to them for free. So, I mean, you have that, you have crime, you have all these other things, but everything is based down to education.
Yeah.
Everything is.
It really is.
So.
Well, and you know, at the end of the day, kids, you know, they try hard and they don't get the right direction. They don't get the right education. They don't live up to their potential and it creates more of these problems with the crime that we're talking about, you know.
Right.
So they kind of all go hand in hand.
Right.
So What are you seeing out there?
Like I said, the biggest issue that I'm seeing right now is people are sick and tired of the crime.
Yeah.
I mean, every door that I've knocked on, everybody that I've talked to, they are so sick and tired of getting their cars broken into. They're mm-hmm. tired of hearing about shootings every single night.
Right.
I mean, it is awful right now. And I've talked to so many people that have lived in Little Rock their whole entire life, and they said, I don't even recognize this city anymore.
Right.
Like, where are we living right now?
Right.
They're terrified of going out at night.
So. Are they asking you about school safety?
Yeah, I do hear about school safety some, but not much.
Okay.
So I think that's definitely something that we're going to be addressing next year.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, we need to take a little short break here. And just on the other side, we're going to pick up. Hope Heather can stay with us here just a little bit longer. David Ray, Representative David Ray, is going to be on the phone here in just a few minutes. And we're going to be talking with him in the next hour. So stay tuned. This is Alan Kerr for Dave Elswick, and we'll be right back. Good morning. This is Alan Kerr in for Dave Elswick on the Dave Elswick Show on this bright Monday morning. Hope everyone had a great weekend. It was a beautiful, beautiful weekend. And we're here in the studio this morning with Heather Turchie, candidate for District 75. And a state representative candidate, District 75. On the line, we have David Ray, Representative David Ray. And he is, if I can look it up here again, he is District 69.
Hey, good morning, Alan.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Hey, David. Yeah.
They changed all these district numbers, and I'm a little still trying to catch up with whose district is what. But good morning. Well, David, tell us where your district is. Hey, where are you located?
Well, it's the old District 40, basically the same district, new number. A little bit of changes. This district is mostly the northern part of Pulaski County, including all of the rural unincorporated areas in the county. So everything from Highway 5 outside Cabot all the way over to Oak Grove, Marche, the north tip of Maumelle where I live. And then I've got the southern part of Faulkner County too, so the city of Mayflower, most of the area around Lake Conway, and then the area out towards South Pillow, Highway 286 and Clinton Road area out there.
So, Heather, if you ever thought your district was hard to walk, his is God Almighty.
I bet it's flat, though.
Well, you don't know so much walk door to door. You sort of drive door to door.
Yeah.
And get out and knock on doors that way.
You have to have a driver, and you know he slows down long enough for you to leap out and run to the door and
drop and roll.
Yeah, drop and roll.
Well, it's a great district with a lot of great people, and I'm truly honored to represent them in the Arkansas House. And as you know, I'm running for my second term.
Yes, sir.
I'm finishing up my first term right now, and feel like we made a lot of great progress on issues that matter to conservative voters. But as you also know, there's a lot of work that remains to be done. And so I'm signing up for 2 more years to help be a leader in that fight.
Good deal. Well, we really appreciate your service and everything you've done to this point. Tell us about some of the things that you've got in the hopper for the next session. I think you're sponsoring issue number 2. And tell us what issue number 2 is on the ballot.
Yeah, well, issue number 2 will be settled before next session, but it'll be on your November ballot this year. So this is one of the 3 constitutional amendments that the legislature referred out to the voters. What it would do is it's known as the Constitutional Amendment and Ballot Initiative Reform Amendment. What it would do is very simply raise the passage threshold for future constitutional amendments and initiated acts from a bare majority, which is just 50% plus 1, up to 60%. And the reason for that is pretty simple. We need this is a much-needed guardrail for our constitutional amendment and initiative process. So constitutions, as a general matter, are the charter document of your state, okay? They outline the rights of citizens and the roles and responsibilities of government. They're not meant to be amended in sort of a willy-nilly fashion four, five, six times every 2 years like we do with our state constitution. If you look at our right. U.S. Constitution, which we all love and revere, it's only been amended 27 times in the history of our country. But our state constitution, which has been around for about 80 fewer years, has been amended four times that much.
Right.
Over 100 times and counting.
So you're saying our constitution, our state constitution, is a little too easy to amend and should be taken a little more seriously as far as changes go. I know when I was a state rep that we had, you know, constitutional amendments every single session. And out of four of them, I think they allow four of them on the ballot, one of them. At least one of them passed just about every election. So,
absolutely.
I agree
and
with you.
I'll give you a couple of examples of bad ones that that sort of motivated me to do this. You know, the state legislature, as you mentioned, we refer out three every 2 years. It wouldn't hurt my feelings at all if we just decided to only refer out one or maybe even none. But you know, it was just a handful of years ago that we put a half-cent sales tax in our state constitution to fund roads.
Right.
Now, I disagreed with that tax, okay? You can make arguments for and against it, but I don't think there's any argument that it should be a constitutional amendment versus a statute. If the legislature wanted to fund roads with a half-cent sales tax, they could have just passed a law instituting a half-cent sales tax.
Right.
There was no reason to bury this in the Constitution and cement it in there forever and ever, because there's no way to know what future legislatures will need 20 years, 30 years, 40 years down the road.
That's the sort of thing
I'm trying to ensure that when we do amend our Constitution, that there's general consensus among the voters. The second thing I'd point out is that our initiative system and our constitutional amendment system as well, it makes us really susceptible to big money out-of-state interests that want to come in and hijack our lenient ballot access rules to try and buy a constitutional amendment. And this is what the left is trying to do. So if you look at the David Couches of the world, these folks realize that their crazy left-wing ideas are not going to make it through our legislature because we have a majority of Republicans in both chambers and a Republican governor. But what they will do is they'll get millions of dollars, mostly from out of state, and they'll pay a bunch of canvassers to get signatures for an issue, and they'll put it on the ballot, and it'll usually have a misleading ballot title. It'll usually be difficult to understand. There'll be a misleading ad campaign that deceives the voters and temporarily convinces them that something is a good idea. And they want to do this with ranked choice voting. They want to do this with jungle primaries. They want to do this with all sorts of things that would basically be a backdoor to rigging our elections.
Excellent.
And that's part of the reason I sponsored issue two, was to try and stop it.
Well, very good.
That's actually really good.
Yeah, very yeah. Understandably. Well, I mean, it's just a little too easy to change our Constitution. That should be, since that's the base and the framework of our laws, that should be the last thing or the hardest thing for us to change. And if and when we do, it needs to be something very meaningful. So to, I mean, and like you said, it limits, the way they set that up, it limits future legislations, legislative sessions, and it simply limits everything going forward where it's, you know, that like you said, could be done in statute rather than in the Constitution, and makes us less nimble, I guess, if to use a word.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and good, you know, I would argue that good ideas will still be able to pass. If you've got a good idea and you get out and you run a campaign explaining to the voters of the state why we need to make a change to our Constitution, you know, good ideas will still be able to get 60%, just like they can get 50%. What this
right.
would prevent is, you know, something squeaking by with just a bare majority of support that otherwise really shouldn't pass were it not for either like a misleading ballot title or a misleading ad campaign where tons of money's pumped in and people are temporarily convinced that something is something that it's not.
Right.
So good ideas will still be able to pass, but we'll ensure that when we do take the you know, really the significant step of amending our Constitution, that we have genuine consensus among the voters. And, you know, there's a reason you can't amend our U.S. Constitution. The threshold to amend the U.S. Constitution is much, much higher than what I'm proposing at the state level.
Right.
So about half of our constitutional amendments in Arkansas end up passing with about 60% support. So I don't view this as something that will shut down that process. It's just something that'll put some much-needed guardrails around it.
Okay. We got about 30 seconds before a hard break, David, and David's going to be with us. Representative is going to be with us in the next half hour. Give us just a couple of points of what's going to happen in the upcoming session. We've got about 10 seconds here. We'll jump on that just the other side of the break. Stay with us. This is Alan Kerr in for Dave Ellswick on The Dave Ellswick Show. Be right back. Good morning. This is Alan Kerr in for Dave Ellswick on The Dave Ellswick Show. I am a former state representative, former insurance commissioner for the state of Arkansas, and here talking with you in place of Dave this morning. Dave is out, and I'm trying to fill in for the illustrious Dave Ellswick as best I can. We have a really good lineup for you this morning. On the line, I've got Representative David Ray of District 69. And when we left off, he was talking about ballot position 2, which we went over pretty well. That's to change the number of votes it takes to put anything as a constitutional amendment on the ballot. And right now we're going to go into what he plans on doing in the upcoming legislative session. This is going to be a full session, going to be the big one, and should be interesting. Representative, what are we looking at coming up?
Well, there's any number of topics that need to be tackled, Dave, as you well know. Or sorry, Alan.
Hey, that's okay.
I forgot you're filling in. Oh, gosh. Well, it's too early in the morning. That's my problem.
Yeah.
I haven't had enough caffeine yet.
Amen to that.
Well, picking up where I ran the train off in the ditch, you know, look, lowering taxes is an evergreen priority for me. I believe firmly that Arkansans are taxed far too much and the state spends too much money. So we need to continue the process of chipping away and lowering our income tax to put more money back in the pockets of hardworking Arkansans. Over the last 8 years, the legislature and the governor have done some really good work lowering our income tax from 7%, which was the highest in our state's history, down to 4.9%, which is now the lowest the income tax has ever been since we've had an income tax in Arkansas. But there's a lot more progress to go. You know, I would love us to one day join the ranks of Texas and Tennessee and Florida and all the states who have zero income tax, and so we'll need to keep working in that direction. Another big thing is crime. I'll just mention these real quickly, and then we
sure
can pick out something you may want to dive into. You know, the crime problem, I think you were talking about before I joined, is just completely out of control. It's not just a Little Rock problem, although it's most acute here. This is a problem all over our state, and it has a lot of layers. It has to do with the lack of prison capacity in our state that leads to overcrowding. It has to do with our horrible parole laws that just create a revolving door of justice. This is something that Lieutenant Governor Tim Griffin, who's running for Attorney General, is leading on, and I'm supporting him in that effort. So there's a lot of layers to our crime problem, but it's going to require some fixes, and I'm working on some of those with some other legislators. The third thing is education. You know, we've got to continue to improve education in our state, and I think there's several ways to do that. Literacy is one. Focusing on STEM education is one, but I believe that school choice for parents and kids is really one of the big keys to unlocking our education potential in the state. So I passed a bill last session to expand our Succeed Scholarship Program, which is one of our school choice programs, expand that to the children of military families. And so I'm going to continue working to expand school choice because I think that every kid, regardless of where they live, and regardless of their income level, deserves a world-class educational opportunity. And then the last thing I'll mention, and this is another evergreen topic, is just pushing back on all the nonsense that's coming out of the Biden administration. You know, when I ran for office, we were anticipating a lot of this stuff, but now that we're seeing what it looks like more fully, there's just so much to push back against. These crazy left-wing policies coming out of Washington and a lot of the just sort of cultural rot gut that we see, you know, with this, the radical transgender movement, these left-wing value systems that liberals are using to instill in children through libraries and so forth. Those are things that need to be addressed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, all these are top 10 topics, no question about it.
I'll let you pick which one we want to talk more about.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's talk taxes first, and that's always high up on my list. I don't like paying taxes any more than anybody else does. But how do you feel like that the tax reduction should be handled? In other words, obviously, I mean, there's, you know, do away with it all at once. Do we slowly deplete it as we go? What's in your vision to handle the taxes?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's going to have to be a gradual process. That's just what the math tells us. You know, the income tax accounts for about half the state budget. So
right.
if you're gonna phase it out, you're gonna have to do it over a period of time. But that doesn't mean we don't need to move as quickly as possible, and we don't need to be bold and aggressive in our approach. So there's a couple of things that I think are really key in this area. Number one, you got to remember, unlike Washington, D.C., Arkansas has to balance our budget.
Right.
Our Constitution requires us to balance our budget, and we can't just print money out of thin air like they do in Washington. So what that means is our ability to reduce taxes is tied inextricably to our ability to control spending.
Exactly.
And so I'm a big believer that we need to have some sort of what they're called taxpayer expenditure limits. But you really, in my opinion, if you're really going to make this happen, you've got to have some sort of statutory or constitutional cap on spending growth. This is something that Bruce Westerman, as you may remember, when he was majority leader in the Arkansas House, he tried to enact, and it was blocked by Governor Beebe. But this is really important. States that have really limited their growth and spending, if you wait on politicians to be disciplined spenders, you're going to grow very old waiting on that to happen.
Absolutely.
So the way you do it is you put in place a cap that forces them to abide by it. So once you do that, that helps really accelerate the process because you only increase spending to the extent it needs to be increased, and then you dedicate the rest of the growth in the economy to reducing taxes. That's really the way you do it. And I used to say, after the 2019 session when they raised like six different taxes, I used to say the first step to lowering taxes is to quit increasing them.
Right.
I think we've reached that point because we didn't pass any tax increases in the last session, thankfully. And I can't imagine that we will going forward. But now we got to really focus in on the spending. That's
right.
The key.
Well, hopefully with the new administration coming in, you'll have a whole lot more support than what you've had before. We can make some of that happen. So let's go ahead and pivot to crime real quick. We've got about 3 minutes before we have to go to a break. Let's jump into crime. It's more than a 3-minute topic, but what do you see happening?
Well, the biggest thing, I'll try to cover this in just a couple of minutes. I mean, the biggest thing is, most immediately, we need new state prison capacity. So if we went 20 years without building any highways in the state, Alan, you would say that we've let our state infrastructure decay and become dilapidated. Well, that's exactly what we've done with prisons. We have not built a prison since 2003, I believe. I mean, in 2003, I'm pretty sure Shania Twain was at the top of the country charts or something like that. I mean, it's been a while. But during that time, our population has grown by between 300,000 and 400,000 people. So inevitably, a certain percentage of those folks are going to commit violent crimes and need to go to state prison.
Right.
So our infrastructure is not kept up with our population, and as a result, we have massive prison overcrowding. The state has to release about 2,000 state prisoners per year under emergency powers because we simply have nowhere to put them.
Right.
And we already have very lenient parole laws. So prisoners are just going free left and right, and they're coming right back to our communities, and that's a big thing that's driving crime in the state.
Yes,
so
sir.
Nobody likes to say it. To admit that we need to build a new prison. It's not anything anybody takes any joy in, but it's just a reality.
Yeah,
if you can do math, you know that we need a new state prison.
Right. It's not a sexy topic, no question about it. Well, we'll appreciate that, and we'll pick up that again on the other side of the break, along with some education and pushback on Washington. This is Alan Kerr in for Dave Ellswick. We're going to break for to make some money here, and we'll be right back. Good morning. This is Alan Kerr in for Dave Ellswick on 101.1. And we've got Representative David Ray here on the line with us. And we've been talking about politics and the upcoming legislative session and all the things we can expect in the next legislative session. We've covered crime. Let's jump to education real quick. Representative, what are your plans for education?
Well, there's a lot of things that need to happen in education. Everything from an increased focus on literacy to increased focus on STEM education, that's science, technology, engineering, and math. We got to do more on workforce, equipping people for the workforce. I believe we got to do much more on adult education. This is a really unfortunate statistic, but we've got 300,000. I'm going to repeat that. We have 300,000 adults in Arkansas, age 25 or older, who do not have a high school diploma or the equivalent.
My goodness.
And that's something that I'm really going to drill down on and try to figure out what more we can do to address that. Because if we're ever going to solve, you know, when you talk about the workforce problem, everybody says, well, we got to equip kids in school for the workforce, and that's absolutely true. There, you know, we need to be teaching kids about career pathways and things like that. However, if that's our only solution to the problem, it's going to take 40-45 years to solve.
Right. A couple of generations.
Yeah, we've got to attack it at both ends. We've got to figure out a way to crack this riddle with adult education while also focusing on more traditional education as well. Another thing I'm a big believer in is school choice. You know, I just subscribe to what Democrats view as the radical belief that parents, not the government, ought to decide where and how your children are educated.
Exactly.
I don't think that's particularly controversial, but you know, it stems from the fact that the way we decide who goes to what school is extremely antiquated. The government draws arbitrary lines and calls them districts, and then you get assigned to a district based on where you live. What if the government drew arbitrary lines called grocery districts and said you can only shop in the grocery district that you live in?
Right.
If you want to go out to Costco in West Little Rock to get your groceries, too bad. You live in Midtown. Can't go.
Right.
I mean, that would just be absurd. We would laugh at it.
Yeah.
And whoever proposed it would probably get voted out. But yet, that's the way we decide who goes to what school. And so, you know, I think at the end of the day, the money ought to follow the child, and parents ought to have choices in where and how they send their kids to school. And we've been working on this for several sessions in the legislature. I've only been there for 2 years, but I was able to pass a bill that I'm very proud of. It's the first school choice bill, I think, that passed since 2015. And it was to expand the Succeed Scholarship Program. So our Succeed Scholarship Program provides a tuition voucher to qualifying students. It's a very small program. But I expanded it to include the children of military families. And that's really important because our military families don't always get to choose where they live and, by extension, where they go to school. The government decides that for them. And so this gives them the flexibility. Also, their kids change schools quite a bit growing up. And so this gives them some flexibility to hopefully continue continuity of a certain type of education, if that's what they're accustomed to. And I just think we need to take a look at doing more and more and more of that across the state. It would be very, very good for education, in my opinion.
Well, I agree with you, sir. And you know, I'm a firm believer in competition. You know, and for so long, the public schools didn't have any competition. And, of course, now you've got charter schools and things coming up. And, of course, they scream about those because it cuts into their cash flow. But, you know, if you ran a world-class school, public or private, you're going to draw people to it. And people are going to try to get their kids into that school. So I think that the need for competition is long overdue. And by giving the parents that money to take their children where they want, now you're competing for that customer. You know what I mean?
Well, absolutely. And it's a healthy competition. It's
right.
A competition that improves both sides. So, you know, I'm not just talking about private school. I'm talking about being able to take your kid to a different public school.
Right.
If that's what you want to do. You know, maybe your home school is the school that you've been assigned to, that you're zoned for, as they like to say. Maybe that's an underperforming school. Maybe it's not an underperforming school, and maybe your child's just being bullied there, and you need to take that kid to a new school.
Right.
There's a million different reasons that parents should be afforded the options that come with choice. And look, in every other facet of our society, we demand choice. We're used to it. We expect it. I mean, think about how many options you have when you go to buy any given consumer product. And yet, with education, the government just says, here's your school, you live here, you're zoned for it. And what that results in, it basically makes public education a commodity that's bought and sold through the real estate market.
Exactly.
If you can afford to live in a wealthy area with a great school, then good for you. But if you can't afford to live in a rich area, you know, you're at the mercy of whatever the government provides you.
Exactly.
That's not right.
Well, I mean, nowadays the parent has control over just about everything else. The things they see on TV, they got control over the clothing they wear, what they put in their bodies, what kind of food they eat. And for the parents not to have access and control over the education that child gets to make that child a well-rounded human being and a productive member of society when they get older is, in my view, just criminal. Parents should have all kinds of choices.
Yeah, I'm the father of a 5-year-old daughter and a 2-year-old son, and so this is deeply personal to me. I've got a responsibility before God to raise my children as best I can and you know, and do so in a way that's pleasing to him. And I believe that includes providing them a good education.
Exactly.
And, you know, these people that say, oh, well, just wait. We'll get the system in order down the road. Well, that's not going to do my kids any good.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not willing to sacrifice my children's education now in the hopes that someday somebody off in the distance a couple of decades down the road gets their act together. That's not a Faustian bargain I'm willing to make.
I agree. Well, we got about 2 minutes left. Give us some information on pushback on the things coming out of Washington. I know that people don't realize that if your college loans are forgiven, that creates an immediate tax burden. You're going to have to pay taxes because that's going to be considered income. Tell us some of the things coming out of Washington that you want to push back on.
Well, that's one of the issues that you've all seen in the news recently is this, what I believe is an unlawful action by the Biden administration to unilaterally, without congressional approval, forgive these student loans. And let's just be clear, there's no forgiving the student loans.
Right.
Transferring them over to different sets of taxpayers. And so if you were a responsible American that paid off your student loans, or maybe you forewent student loans in order to work your way through college, or maybe you didn't go to college, you're going to get to pay the bill for other people that did.
Right.
I don't begrudge anybody who took out student loans. I just don't want to pay them off for you.
Yeah, I agree. Well, this has been Alan Currien for the Dave Ellswick Show. We've had Representative David Ray in. The time goes by fast when you're doing this. Representative, thank you so much for spending your time with us this morning.
Thanks for having me on, Alan.
No problem, sir. And again, Alan Currien for Dave Ellswick. We've got a hard break here, and we'll be right back with you just on the other side. Arkansas, this is Alan Kerr in for Dave Ellswick on the Dave Ellswick Show on this bright, beautiful Monday morning as the sun comes up, looking over my shoulder here after a beautiful weekend that we had here in Arkansas, in central Arkansas, and looking forward to a really nice week coming up and ahead of us. I'm in for Dave Ellswick this morning. He is out this week, and trying to fill in as best I can. On the line, we have candidate for sheriff of Pulaski County. On the line, his name is Blue Keller. Now, I was a former state representative, and then I was an insurance commissioner after that for the state of Arkansas. And Blue, I had the privilege of working with Blue. He was my director of the Criminal Investigation Division at the Insurance Department. Let me tell you, that is no easy task, handling fraud and criminal activity within the insurance world is not an easy task. But that division is at the same level, has the same authority as the state police in Arkansas. And Blue has just done an exemplary job. And although we're going to be sad to lose him there, he is running for sheriff, a very needed position in Pulaski County. And hopefully he can tell you all about his campaign and what he plans to do. Good morning, Blue.
Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Doing great. Now, Blue, that's just kind of his nickname. His name is Paul Blue Keller, which you'll see on his signs. But anyway, how's your campaign going?
Well, we believe that it's going very, very well. We can't keep enough signs in stock. We have to keep reordering. We're out and we go everywhere. We get invited. We saw y'all up there at North Pulaski over the weekend.
There
were
a lot
of good folks there, some good times. Had a chance to talk to some folks. Left that and went to a fish fry out at Arch Street Volunteer Fire Department. There's a lot of good folks out there. Met Alvy from Alvy News, who wants to sit down with us. So, people are reaching out to us, and we're reaching out to them. So, we think we're doing well. People tell us we're doing well. And we're just going to keep hammering it till the 9th of November.
Good deal. Well, I want to make sure people understand that the county sheriff is not just a position that you vote for when you're in the outlying areas of the county. Certainly that is where he is most important, but county sheriff is voted on countywide, whether you're inside the city limits of Little Rock, North Little Rock, Sherwood, Jacksonville. That is a position that you vote on no matter where you live inside the county. Isn't that correct?
That is correct. The sheriff is a senior law enforcement officer in the county. And I believe that as such, you don't just sit in your office, or you just don't, do the things that are your personal projects. You have to be out there talking with, liaising with the chiefs of each of the municipalities. To some extent, you need to touch base with the mayors. We've spoken with some of the mayors and mayoral candidates to let them know that, we right now, crime statistics are increasing.
Yes, they are.
And so if we try to do it Little Rock or Maumelle or Jacksonville or just the county, we can't do it by ourselves.
Right.
We have got to be in this together. We have got to work together. We've got to train together. We've got to share information. And not just with each of the law enforcement agencies, but we have to be down in those communities, and we have to be showing the folks in the communities that we are there for them and that we will be there for them, and the sheriff's office, it covers the gambit. You're not gonna want to dial 911 and have somebody say, 911, what's your party affiliation?
Right.
911, It's all or none. We're either going to have to get in there and churn and burn together, or the bad guys are going to win.
Absolutely. Well, I want to bring up, you've got, if I understood it right, you've got someone else on the line with us.
I do. I have my campaign manager,
okay.
And our senior investigator, Richard Friend.
All right.
Good morning.
I just want to make sure we introduced you both. I apologize for not doing that right out of the gate. Richard, you've got a tough job, man. You're his campaign manager, and what's it like managing Paul Blue Keller?
Well, the hardest part is keeping up with him. when we started this, we knew it was going to be an uphill battle. Blue's ground game is the greatest. I've literally watched him go to a room full of people that we weren't sure how receptive they were going to be to the message, and Blue gets in there and just, he came up with this. He said, it's about people, not politics. He sits down and says, I don't care what your party affiliation is. Let's talk about the safety of your family. And I literally watched him take people, that we didn't think were going to be receptive and go, you know what, you're right, like a sign, or I'm going to donate, or I want to help you, or I want to volunteer. And it's the right faces in the right place. Blue's the right man for the job right now.
I couldn't agree more. Having worked with Blue for several years, I couldn't have been more proud of the job that he's been doing at the insurance department. So, crime, give us your top three things that you think would send to push back on this increasing in crime on a weekly basis. I mean, there's not a Monday morning I don't turn a TV on or pick up the paper that we haven't had someone killed over the weekend for just something needless.
Well, that's for sure. I mean, you know, we're just seeing it going and going and going. And there was a thing that was released last week, I believe it was by the FBI. And, you know, it said that Arkansas was like number four in the nation for violent crime. Well, you know, Arkansas, when you talk about Arkansas, you're really, in my opinion, talking about central Arkansas, that being Pulaski County and Jefferson County. But, you know, with our concerns being right here in Pulaski County. And I think most people would agree that in this day and age, when you're talking about, you know, violence, there's a close relationship to drugs, violence, drugs, and gangs, violence, drugs, gangs, and weapons. And so we need to be taking these things head on instead of skirting around them. And right now, you know, in the county, the narcotics division was dissolved.
They dissolved the narcotics division.
That is correct. The current sheriff dissolved the narcotics division. He pulled our liaison with the DEA, with the FBI, with the IRS. Okay? And so, if you're, like I said, we need to be working together. We need to have a plan. We need to have folks embedded with the drug task forces that exist in the area, and we're not. So we've got to do that. Okay. We have got to get with the individual cities, to get with their narcotics division, to get with them. And I see the sheriff's office as being the adhesive that goes between the different police departments. And I'm not saying to run it. I'm not saying to oversee it. I'm saying just to get in there and say, hey, what can we do to help you guys? Because as they start putting pressure on them in Little Rock, they're going to move through the county over into Maumelle or up into Jacksonville. And we need to be stopping those movements. We need to be aggressively confronting them at all levels.
Okay. Well, hold on to that thought, Mr. Keller. We're going to have to take a break here and let our sponsors tell us what they've got for us. And this is Alan Kerr with the Dave Elswick Show. We'll be right back with Blue Keller just the other side of the break. Good morning, Little Rock. This is Alan Kerr in for Dave Elswick on the Dave Elswick Show on this Monday morning. As the sun comes up, we're looking forward to another beautiful day. On the line, I've got Pulaski County Sheriff candidate Paul Blue Keller, along with his campaign manager, Richard Friend. And they're telling us all the things that they're wanting to do and some of the problems that we're having with crime in the Little Rock area. And I think that is probably the number one issue wherever I go that's on everybody's mind. Every candidate that I've talked to that has gone out into the field and gone door to door and to from one event to another, that is the first thing out of everyone's mouth is that what do we got to do about crime? It's just out of control. And let's try to pick up where we left off, Mr. Keller. Where what do you guys got planned, and where are those changes that we can make to get our arms wrapped around this crime situation?
Well, we have a plan, and our team has spoken with lots of community leaders. We've spoken with law enforcement agencies, citizens, and they say that they want to help us get the department back on track. Okay? Right now, we're losing people just as fast as they can get trained up. Now, why is that really important to the average person? Well, every time that we train a person, every time that you bring a recruit in and you put them through training, that's tax dollars out of your pocket. When you take and you have running anywhere from 60 to 80 open positions, that's you're not combating crime. You don't have the people to do it. You're completely in a reactionary mode. You know, you were out at North Pulaski this weekend, you'll think back to it, or you can go on my Facebook page, and we posted this morning. You know, the sheriff had eight, nine vehicles out there, plus a Bearcat, plus a boat, plus 12 to 15 deputies. You had an assistant chief. You had a major. You had a lieutenant, a couple of sergeants. Well, at the same time, in the county, in the six precincts in the county, only five of them were covered, and they were only covered by one deputy. No backup.
Right.
We have got to have a priority. Our priority has to be to take care of the civilian population, to go out there and to combat the crime.
So we need to be better stewards of our resources.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we can take that. And, you know, one of the main constitutional missions of the sheriff is to run the Pulaski County Jail. In that jail right now, we are spending just buku money, $1.21 million in mandatory, in unprogrammed overtime from the first of the year to halfway through June. From June to the end of December, I'm guessing that's going to be somewhere around the $3 million mark.
Oh, my God.
That's real money.
that's a lot of money. But Alan, moreover, what about the deputies? And the deputies are contracted to work 5 8-hour days. They are being required to work a mandatory sixth day of overtime. Well, that's great if you're just in it for the money. But, hey, what about if you've got a family? What if you've got things that you've got to do, you know, just to keep your household running? Not only that.
Well, you're using your deputies up. I mean, that people, human beings, they need a little time off, you know. And if it's one day a month that they're working overtime, that's one thing. But every week, that's ridiculous. And no wonder we can't keep them. Keep these deputies, and why we have so many open positions. We're not treating the ones that we've got well enough, and the ones that are loyal, we're using them up.
Alan, you know, one of the questions we've got is that the sheriff was able to get all of these supervisors and you know, people that were out here at North Pulaski this weekend. And like Blue said, you've got one person per district for a county as populous as Pulaski County. But yet what he doesn't tell you is there's a memo out there that says that these enforcement deputies are being taken off the street to work in the jail because staffing levels are so bad. And you ask the sheriff, what are you doing to help morale? What are you doing for, you know, what are you doing to bring people in? And he says, well, I replaced the locks in the jail. And things like that. Well, you know, the people of the county don't know that you've got people that are not patrolling because they're in the jail working because people can't work for him because he treats them so bad.
Right.
And it's a terrible crisis situation.
Well, it sounds like it. I mean, there's a lot to people management. And then, you know, you can be a good law enforcement officer, but you've got to be a good people manager, too. You've got to manage your resources correctly. You've got to manage your people correctly. You got to keep morale up. There's a lot of things that go into running something like that. So what are some of the things that you guys plan to do right out of the gate once you take office?
Well, we have been, like I said earlier, we've been contacted by a number of people that have worked in the county before that have certifications, but they've just gone somewhere else because they couldn't work in that toxic environment over there. And we have been told that, you know, the day after we're sworn in, we'll get letters from them asking that they can, asking us to take them back. Now, does that mean that every one of them? No. We'll obviously be very selective and make sure that the people that are coming back are the people that are qualified. But then we're also looking at veterans. There's a lot of veterans running around here in the county. We're looking at colleges. We're looking at the actual military personnel that are currently in reserve or guard programs that have military police specialties that need, you know, jobs between the times that they're working for the federal government. And so there's just lots and lots of people that have come to us and said, hey, we want to come back, but we want to come back to a professional organization. We are going to look at taking the folks that are in the jail that have worked and that they've demonstrated a good work ethic and they've proven themselves that want to go to the street. We will let them transition over to enforcement. So we have a lot of things going on, but the big thing is we want to increase the safety for the entire county, from the people, the citizens of the county, to the deputies that are on the street, to the deputies that are working in the jail. We have to increase officer safety. We have to increase civilian safety. And we have to increase school safety. So we are taking a real hard look at the SRO program. That's the School Resource Officer Program. You know, we're kind of sometimes referring to it as a Moses plan, making our students even safer. We will do our part by going through our budget and our manpower, what we call the table of organization and equipment, and we will find home it to see where we can, once we're back up numbers-wise, where we can slide people over into the schools. Money, you know, we will do our fair share of being able to work our budget down so that we can afford putting these SROs in. But we want to put an SRO, or at least help put an SRO, in every school out there.
Okay.
You know, these are our most important assets.
Absolutely.
We've got to hear them.
Well, so we got about a minute left. I want you to tell people where they can get in touch with you and where they can donate and how do they get involved with you and your campaign.
Very simple. Blue Keller, the number 4sheriff.com. Blue Keller, 4sheriff.com. Or on Facebook, Paul Blue Keller for Sheriff. They can read about what we're doing. They can donate. There's a donate button on there, and they can email us. The email address is there, and we will get signs to them. We'll come out and sit down and talk to them. You know, we'll interact with them any way they want.
Okay, good deal. All right. I'm sorry. We got to jump on here and do a break, Richard. We'll pick that up on just the other side of the break. And I am Alan Kerr, filling in for Dave Ellswick on the Dave Ellswick Show. We'll be right back. Good morning, Little Rock. This is Alan Kerr in for the Dave Ellswick on the Dave Ellswick Show. It's a bright, beautiful Monday morning. And on the line, we've got our county sheriff candidate, Pulaski County Sheriff candidate, Paul Blue Keller, and his campaign manager, Richard Friend. And they're telling us what all those things we can do to take care of crime in Pulaski County, and what they'd like to do once Paul is elected for county sheriff. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning, back.
Before the break, I kind of cut you off. I thought I might have heard Richard trying to say something there.
Yeah, Alan, I appreciate it. I didn't rush. We're at break. You go Facebook and you'll go to Paul Blue Keller Sheriff, you're going to see a lot of videos on there that are a culmination of several things that happened. A lot of people have come forward and say, hey, I've worked in the sheriff's office, or I saw things happen and I want you to check on them. And, you know, some of the things we thought were outrageous. I said, there's no way these things are happening. And so we've sent several Freedom of Information Act requests to the sheriff's office and got back a bunch of information that actually validated what people were telling us. You've got the sheriff that took a $2,000 campaign donation after his department arrested an individual on several felony charges. And he won't release the body camera video of that individual bragging about, I have an agreement with the sheriff. Now, you can go to our Facebook page and you can see that video and you can see the financial documents where the sheriff took that $2,000 payment because he claimed it on his election financial report. You've got 17 convicted felons that are working in the jail. You've got a convicted murderer that accessed secure crime information computers within the jail and contacted district judges trying to get people released to different programs on behalf of the sheriff's department. You know, when he talks about, when the sheriff talks about crime is going down, well, maybe it's because it's all happening within his administration. And if people go and look at the Facebook page, you know, they're going to see some things that are outrageous, but we've backed it up with our own documents that prove that these things are happening. And the more people find out about it, the madder they get.
Yeah, I can imagine things like that. But, you know, it's sad that that kind of thing goes on, but it does. So what if do you have any plans for, let's say, school security, better school security? I know the governor's office is working on it. I know the cities and townships are working on it. What is the as sheriff, what would you do as far as school security goes?
That's what we were talking about there right before the break with the SROs, the school resource officers.
Yes, sir.
You know, we would like to put a uniformed officer, or we would like to see a uniformed officer placed in every school. We believe that it is a deterrence from a number of perspectives. A good school resource officer will be an experienced officer who knows how to talk to people. You know, on the streets, they've learned how to talk to irate citizens. You know, they pull citizens over and had to do the verbal judo with them, just trying to get the job done. But so they're going to talk to school administrators. They're going to talk to irate parents. They're going to talk to appreciative parents. I've seen them get down on their knees so that they're not looking down at a child. They're looking, you know, kind of up so the child doesn't feel threatened by them. But then they also are out there teaching in those schools. They teach the staff. They teach the students. They look and formulate defensive plans so that if there is a problem or a lockdown, everybody knows where to go and what to do. And in the most extremist circumstances, if there is a situation, then you want somebody that will run toward the sound of the gunfire. And so we, you know, that can be paid for completely by the law enforcement organization, completely by the school system, or, you know, a combination of both. And I can't tell you exactly how many could be funded by what, but what I can tell you is that I think that this is a cost that we cannot not pay. We've got to make our schools safer. We've got to make our children as safe as they can possibly be.
I agree. So let's pivot just a little bit to money, which is you know, part of politics and part of any government agency or government entity. You handle you have handled budgets before. And you handle one at your current position as the CID director at the Arkansas Insurance Department. What tell everybody what your experience is with managing budgets and coming in under budget.
Well, you know, from the day that you go into the United States Army, in any organization, you're going to be responsible for equipment. You're going to be responsible for personnel and their families. And the Army does not have any, what's the word I'm looking for? They do not tolerate you busting a budget, just plain and simple. So, you know, you start out in a mechanized infantry unit and you've got vehicles that cost somewhere around, you know, anywhere from $1.5 to $3 million apiece. And so you start out there, and then every time that you get promoted, every organization that you go up, your number of personnel, your amount of equipment, your table of organizations and equipment, it increases, and those budget lines increase. Again, you get no grace if you bust a budget, and if you bust a budget, you're pretty much betting your bars anytime that you do something like that. So I believe that the budget should be transparent. I believe that the mission is dictated by the threat. So what are the threats we're looking for out here? We have to come up with a mission to offset those threats. That mission dictates the personnel and equipment that you need, and therein is how you form that budget. Your budget supports accomplishment of that mission. You should lay out that budget in a very understandable format so that anytime anybody in the county says, well, you know, why are you spending that much money and what are you spending that money on? You lay it out and you say, here it is. Take a look.
Well, that's very good. You've always come in under budget, haven't you, Blue?
Correct. Absolutely.
Yeah. And you're not afraid to go ask for more money when you need it, are you?
As you well know.
Oh, man, I tell you what, Blue is he's really good at managing budgets. But boy, I tell you what, when he's passionate about a need, he will find that money. He'll get it done. And you know, the county jail is under the purview of the Pulaski County Quorum Court. They are the legislative, the county legislative arm that manages and dictates those budgets to the county jail and to all the different divisions of the county. So I'm assuming that you're prepared to work with the Quorum Court once you're elected.
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's no doubt about it. You learn in the military, you learn in state government over here where we are now, that, you know, there is a chain of command and that you have to work within that chain of command. You are subservient to that chain of command. But if you are open and honest in your dialogue and you're transparent in the things that you do, you know, common sense will prevail. In the jail right now, the budget over there is just totally blown. And when you try to figure out what's being spent for what, it's extremely difficult. For example, they have over there what's called a reentry program. Now, we are all about second chances for people, absolutely. But second chances based on programs that have been in existence and programs that have proven track records.
Right.
The entry program over there, there's been hundreds of thousands of dollars spent on this reentry program. And when we ask where the money's coming from, they say it's a private foundation. And they say that it's not FOIable. Well, I tend to disagree because, you know, it is the Sheriff Eric Higgins program. And it is housed at 2900 South Woodrow, which is the sheriff's office. But when you ask them where the money's coming from and where it's going to, they don't want to tell you.
Right.
Well, we FOI'd and we found out that there is at least $250,000 that has been spent on things like popcorn machines, 55 and 65 inch TVs, hair, what do you call, conditioner, graduation gowns, and yoga mats.
Oh my goodness! Well, we got to take one more break in this. We got one more segment left in the in this hour, and we're going to pick up right where we left off on the other side of the break. And I want to get a little bit deeper into Paul Buchheller's history and his qualifications. This is Alan Kerr in for Dave Ellswick. We'll be right back. Good morning. This is Alan Kerr in for Dave Ellswick on the Dave Ellswick Show. Coming up at 8 o'clock, we've got our financial issues live show. That's going to run from 8 to 9. At 9 o'clock, I'm back in the studio. For one more hour of the Dave Ellswick Show. And on that hour, we will have a little bit of a treat. We've got Razorback Zach of Inside the Hog Pen. We're going to talk everything football and everything Razorback during that hour. Right now, we have Paul Blue Keller, who is our Pulaski County Republican candidate for county sheriff, and his campaign manager, Richard Friend, on the line. And Blue, I want you to tell us a little bit about your history. I mean, Blue's got just a tremendous history that would overqualify him for most jobs, but especially for county sheriff. Blue, why don't you give us a little bit of your history?
All right. Well, obviously, I was born and raised here in Arkansas. I graduated, went through ROTC, and was commissioned as a second lieutenant in the U.S. Army. I spent 23 and a half years in infantry. I was airborne, ranger, special forces qualified. I got a master's degree in national security affairs while I was in the Army, and then I worked as your defense and Army attaché in Malawi, Uganda, and Mozambique, sub-Saharan Africa. When I got out of there, I did some commercial risk management for about 5 years as we changed over the customs and excise program for Mozambique. Came back to the United States, got my second master's degree, this time in secondary education, and I taught and coached out at Arkansas Baptist and Baptist Prep now.
Okay, so let's hold on just right there. You were a coach at Arkansas Baptist. Now, in my mind, folks, that makes him a really good candidate for running a team of law enforcement officers, but that's just me, you know. Go ahead, Blue.
Okay, so while I was doing that, I got involved with the Pulaski County Sheriff's Office, and I was a deputy with them. I was full-time until I took a contract back in Northwest Africa, where I ran security as a director of security for a gold mine in the Sahara Desert. I came back then, and as I was over there and coming back and forth, I met a guy by the name of Alan Kerr and started being assessed to come into the position where I currently reside as the director of the Criminal Investigation Division for the Arkansas Insurance Department. So 23 years in the Army, retiring as a lieutenant colonel, 10 years in law enforcement, and ready to slide that over and apply all of those things to running the Pulaski County Sheriff's Office.
Very good. I don't know of anyone in the world who's got that kind of history, that kind of resume to make a better sheriff's candidate. Blue is a well-rounded person. He is good with leadership. He is studious with tax dollars. He is and you know what? And Blue told me, tell him a little bit about what you intend to do as far as your attendance at the insurance, I mean, not the insurance department, but at the sheriff's department once you're elected. Are you just going to sit behind a desk and give orders?
No, that's not the way we work with special forces. That's not the way you coach. You lead from the front. I intend to be a uniformed sheriff. You'll see me in a coat and tie if it's a formal something ceremony of some type that we need to go to. But I intend to be a uniformed sheriff. I intend to delegate authority while I hold on to responsibility. We intend to make sure that we are setting task conditions and standards for everything that we do. and the sheriff's office, so that anybody and everybody, and you know, those task conditions and standards, and you know, we'll have a policy manual that will also be available to anybody that wants to see it for anything that's obviously not, you know, classified or something that we need to, you know, hold the way that we do things to keep somebody from knowing in advance. But otherwise, we'll show you what the task condition and standard is, and we'll train to it. You know, your people have to be well led, well trained, and well maintained. And you can't do that sitting in the office. You have to be out supervising and leading from the front.
Very good. Richard, give us a little bit. Do you have anything else to add?
You know, I think that he's run a good campaign. I think if people go to the Facebook page or the website, they'll learn a lot more about Blue. You're going to see a lot more of him. We've had a lot of people that have come up with support and said we really want to help get this happen. All I ask is questions. You can give Blue a call. You can go to our Facebook page or our website and find out a lot about what he's got in plan and how much better place he can be.
All right. Sounds very good. We got 2 minutes left. Blue, give us your 2 minutes assessment of your campaign and what people can do for you.
Well, obviously, you know, campaigns cost money, and so we're always asking for folks to go on the website and hit that little donate button. We put out there any meet and greets that we're having throughout the weeks, and they're welcome to come to those. The big thing, though, is early voting starts on the 24th. And so we need people to get their friends, their family, their in-laws, their outlaws. Oh, heck, even if they got some enemies, take them down and take them to the polling stations and get them to vote. Because, you know, safety and security is imperative for everybody in the county. And it doesn't matter whether you're in Little Rock, North Little Rock, Sherwood, Jacksonville, out in the unincorporated area, you deserve to be secure in your home. You deserve to be secure in your business. And if we don't have a safe county, we're not going to attract business, and folks are going to leave. So, you know, it's all about the people. It's all about people, not politics.
I agree. Couldn't agree more. Well, again, you know, just because you're a sheriff's candidate doesn't mean that you can't vote for him inside of city limits. We've been on the line with candidate Paul Blue Keller for sheriff. I appreciate you guys being on the line. Coming up is at 8 o'clock is Financial Issues Live, and at 9 o'clock I'll be back on the radio. We'll talk sports and everything football with Razorback Zach. I'm Alan Kerr. We'll see you back in about an hour. Morning, Little Rock. This is Alan Kerr in for Dave Ellswick on the Dave Ellswick Show. We're in our last hour of the Dave Ellswick Show from 9 to 10 this morning on a bright and beautiful, very chilly Monday morning, something we're really not used to. Everybody, I heard the sound of everybody pulling out their coats this morning out of their closets, kind of created almost a sonic boom. But you know, we're used to these 80, 90, 100 days, 100 degree days, and suddenly we are in fall. It hit us quite quickly. The grass is still green and the leaves are still on the trees, but I don't expect it to be that way by the weekend. This morning, I am Alan Kerr, and just to give you a little bit of history, I am a former Justice of the Peace, a former state representative, former insurance commissioner, and I've been in the insurance business since 1980. So anything you want to know about insurance, I could probably come up with an answer for you. But I can tell you one area that I'm very lacking in is the world of sports. And fortunately, I have a son by the name of Zachary who is very up on the world of sports and actually has a podcast called Inside the Hog Pen. And they call him Razorback Zach for that reason. And Zachary's on the line this morning. Are you there, Zach?
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for taking time out of your work schedule to help us out on the radio this morning. We're going to talk for the next hour. We're going to talk everything sports, and fortunately, I can do that with the help of Zachary, who is an expert in it and knows everything sports and Razorback and all the stats and everything to go along with it. So I guess the first thing we need to address is this past game on Saturday with Alabama kind of broke my heart. What do you think?
Well, I tell you, for many years now, I've always said, because I've done the podcast since 2017, and I've always warned people, consult your doctor to make sure your heart is strong enough for Razorback football.
Okay. Well, you're
because
absolutely right.
The last 3 weeks are exactly why I say that. If you want to go back to Missouri State, we struggled with them a couple weeks ago.
That was a nail biter.
Those return, yes, it was, and I was there, and my heart was indeed tested that night. but you struggle with that team, but you come back in the second half. You make your in game adjustments. You go to Dallas and lose in a heartbreaker, and that is the definition of a heartbreaker with the end of that game. And then, of course, Alabama comes to town. And I've said this since Nick Saban has been head coach at the University of Alabama. They're going to be a struggle for a team like Arkansas.
Even with the new coach that we've got.
Even with the new coach, because Alabama is the elite of the elite. And they are one of the teams in the country that are perennially always in the national title picture.
Okay, so tell me, other than their coaching and the coaching staff, what keeps them in that elite? I mean, every 3, 4, 5 years has got to be a turnover. What keeps them in that upper status?
Well, for Alabama, for starters, they don't rebuild; they reload, and that goes to recruiting. That is the way Nick Saban does his thing. Now, I want to shift focus and I want to reassure Arkansas fans, the wheels are not coming off on this team this season. I promise you, it looks grim, it looks bad, but it's two losses. Okay?
Yeah, two losses three, out of eight?
Out of 12. But here's the thing. I want everybody to remember this. We lost three straight last year. Ended up 9-3 with a bowl win.
Okay.
Okay? They won 5 of their last 6. So every goal that Sam Pittman and this coaching staff have is still technically on the table this season. I mean, yes, you're not going to run the table as far as trophy games, but that's okay. Your goal is still attainable. You can still end up 9-3. You can still end up 10-2.
And what do we remind me again? And let's assume a lot of our listeners aren't sports fanatics or sports specialists. And what does it take to get into a bowl game?
So in years past, it is a 6-game winning season. If you win 6 games, you're automatically bowl what they call bowl eligible.
Okay.
With so many bowl games now, and they're broken up into tiers. So The low-level tiers are the ones before Christmas. Like, if you get a December 15th at 3 p.m. on a Thursday afternoon.
Was that the toilet bowl or something like that?
Well, there's so many bowl games out there now that you could get the Cheez-It Sunstripe Bowl or the Pinstripe Bowl or the Mobile Bowl or something like that. But the better records you have, you always want to shoot for what we call the New Year's Six. Or the college football playoff game.
Well, one of them's got to be the Sugar Bowl, and
well, you've got the Sugar Bowl, Sugar Bowl,
Cotton Bowl,
Fiesta Bowl, the Rose Bowl. They've changed so many ways and so many different times that it's kind of hard to keep track. But if you get a New Year's Eve or New Year's Day Bowl, that's what you want to strive for, especially if you're Arkansas.
Okay. So it's really the timing. Doesn't really matter the name of the bowls. It's the timing or the tier that we're trying to shoot for in that prime time viewing.
Getting into a bowl game period is big for any program in college football. But you want to shoot for the higher tier bowls, not for the money, not for the viewership so much. But it helps with recruiting. It helps with developing the team going into next year. You know, one of the things that Sam Pittman had said when we won the Outback Bowl this past January, was,
yeah,
we're 1-0 in 2022. Alabama can't say that.
So okay. He
uses that. He uses everything you do in college football circles back to recruiting. And that's where Sam Pittman has done a fantastic job dipping into the transfer portal and getting these transfers and recruiting in general. I mean, everybody remembers 2018 and 2019 when we couldn't get a touchdown to save our life. We couldn't score if we shot a fish in a barrel.
Man, that's the year I just kind of shut it off. Talk about disappointing. Well, we got about 3 minutes left in this segment. Keep going.
Well, and again, you have to remember, Sam Pittman's only in his third year.
Yeah.
And he's developed the culture, but one thing I want fans to remember is he, in his first 27 games going into that Alabama game,
yeah,
he has the exact same record as Bobby Petrino did in his first 27 games at 15-12.
Wow.
And we all know where Bobby Petrino was projected to go in the end of the 2011 season in the Sugar Bowl, ranked third in the country.
Yeah.
So the goal is there. I mean, we're on an upward trajectory.
So we're on track.
We're on track. I am not worried about this team this season.
Okay. So who's our next opponent this coming weekend?
So we play a top 25 team in Mississippi State in Starkville, 11 a.m. kickoff on the SEC Network. I think they're ranked in like the low 20s. I think they're 24, if I remember right.
Okay. All right, sir. Well, let's take a pause here for just a second, and before we can go into a commercial break. On the other side of the break, we'll talk about the teams coming up. You know, history is history. We know what that is. We may unpack a little bit of that more in the last couple of games, but I want to see what our future looks like. From Razorback Zach of Inside the Hogpen, we will be back just after these commercial messages. Stay tuned. Good morning. This is Alan Kerr in for Dave Ellswick. We're in the final hour of the Dave Ellswick Show. 101.1, The Answer, and we are on the line with, in full disclosure, my son, Zachary Kerr. We call him Razorback Zach. He's does a podcast of Inside the Hog Pen. And what I lack in sports knowledge, he certainly makes up for, because this is kind of what he lives and breathes for. And he keeps track of this stuff and knows a lot about the Razorbacks. And before we head to the break, we were talking about our record up to this point, where it was going to lead us. What do you think, Zach?
Well, I mean, we've got a pretty good chance to win a couple of more games, but there's one stat about Coach Pippen that I want everybody to understand.
Okay.
He has coached 28 games total in his time here at Arkansas. Of those 28 games, 25 of those has been against SEC opponents, a Power 5 foes, like a University of Texas, and or top 25 teams.
Okay, so he plays into a pretty big pool. How many of those did he win?
Well, he won 15 of those. He's currently 15-12.
Okay.
15-13, I'm sorry. As a head coach.
Not bad for a new coach.
Absolutely not. And, you know, when he was hired in 2020, everybody thought, well, what is Arkansas doing? They can't get a big name coach. What are they doing? Now they're starting to see Sam Pittman was a home run hire for the University of Arkansas, and he is the coach that we needed.
And who'd you compare him to, one of our previous coaches?
Yeah, so he's got he has the same record in his first 27 games as Bobby Petrino.
Okay.
But he's also got a very big record under him that no other coach since one of the biggest names to come to coach at the University of Arkansas has. He is 7-0 in his first 7 non-conference games.
Yeah.
The first coach to do that since Lou Holtz of the 1977-1978 season.
Lou Holtz, that's what I was going for. You compared him to Lou Holtz, and Lou Holtz was a good coach, but I Lou Holtz is kind of a very personable guy, and so is Sam Pittman for that matter.
He is. You know, most people, they love coaches, what they call coaches speak. The rah, rah, hooray, cliche coaches.
Yeah.
And Arkansas fans know we have had several of them. And we're not going to go down that list because some of them bring up bad memories. One of the things that I like about Coach Pittman, though, is he says what he's going to do, and then you see it transpire on the field. So when you look ahead at the last 7 games, you've got Mississippi State this weekend, you've got BYU next weekend, and then you have Auburn. Everybody knows that listens to my show on Wednesday nights knows I have a deep hatred for Auburn because of the last 2 years. We have beaten Auburn, theoretically have beaten Auburn twice under Sam Pittman. But thank you to the referees, we won't name names. They have cost us the game.
So why is it just Auburn in particular, the referees are causing us trouble? Of course, they cause us trouble a lot, but why is it that particular game, that particular team that we always have trouble with referees on?
Well, and I tell you, funny you should mention the referees in that game. The Alabama games, this doesn't go just for Alabama. This goes for anybody that plays Alabama. They do not call that game, in my opinion, they don't call that game fairly. There was a lot of calls this past Saturday against the Razorbacks that Alabama should have been called on. There was face masks all over the board. There was holding calls that really just killed the momentum for Arkansas. When you look at it, yes, they jumped out to a 28-0 lead over Arkansas in the first quarter, and everybody thought, oh, crap, the game's over. We're done for. But one thing you've got to remember about this Sam Pittman-led team is they've never quit. They have never stopped fighting, and the third quarter showed that. When you net Alabama and hold Alabama to -1 yard of total offense, quarter, and that's a pretty good in-game adjustment.
Yeah. Well, I just wish I was in the field house when they were at halftime and hear that come to Jesus meeting that he had with them and had them rally come back out.
I do, but at the same time, I really don't. But when you look at the last 7 games, you've got, like I said, you're at Mississippi State this weekend. Next weekend, you travel to number 16, BYU out in Provo, Utah. You travel to Auburn, Alabama, to take on the Auburn Tigers. And then you're not back home until you play Liberty on November the 5th.
Huh.
Your last 3 games is you have the battle for the boot the very next week.
Mm-hmm.
You host Ole Miss, and then you go to Missouri.
Okay.
Nothing says that this team doesn't take. Now, you've got a bye week in there. I think it's 2 weeks. But nothing says that this team can't go on a run. I mean, look back at, you know, Houston Nutt, and I believe it was the 98-99 season. I think it was 98, I believe, if memory serves. He lost one of the biggest games and then rattled off 10 straight.
Yeah. Well, like you said, anything can happen.
It's entirely possible. Anything can happen on any given Saturday. I mean, one of the things you look at, if you keep up with the SEC, is one of the big one of the big dogs in the SEC, the Georgia Bulldogs, struggled against the Missouri Tigers.
Yeah.
And Georgia is the defending national champion. So when I say that anything can happen on any given Saturday, that's exactly what I mean.
Yeah. Well, that's a great thing about sports. I mean, anybody can come back. Anybody can rally. Whether they do or not, that's another question. But with the last about the last 3 minutes of this segment, tell us what we can expect coming into this next game, this next Saturday.
Well, you know, Will Rogers, quarterback for the Mississippi State Bulldogs, is throwing ungodly numbers through the air. He has a record that if he throws more than 400 yards against you, they're going to win the game.
Hmm.
And here's the downside about that. I'm a realist when it comes to the Razorbacks. I want my Hogs to win the national title every year, but we have to keep it realistic. Unfortunately, Arkansas is dead last in defending the pass. And that is across all college football. I'm talking Division II, Division III, everything. And they're giving up almost 400 yards a game. That doesn't bode well going to Starkville against one of the better passers of the SEC. It's going to be a dogfight. But I honestly think the Hogs are going to come out. They're going to make the adjustments that they've been trying to make since the A&M game. And I think you're going to see an Arkansas win. I think you're going to see them win their first true road test of the season. And that's going to give them momentum going into the BYU game, because these next two games, they're top 25 matchups, and they're on the road. They're not easy.
Well, and didn't you say that on the road you're kind of at a disadvantage? In other words, you said, what was it, like a three-point spread automatically that they give the team that's the home team? You know, I can automatically kind of give you 3 points.
The way it usually works is that the home team sometimes gets that, you know, 3-4 point advantage just because they're at home and they have that home field advantage.
Right.
But with the Mississippi State game, you know, Mississippi State's a 6.5 point favorite.
Okay.
So they have that advantage, but you're also going into a hostile environment. And if Arkansas fans remember, they have cowbells at Starkville. I don't know the correlation between. I've covered the Razorbacks since 98. I mean, Dad, you remember me watching those Razorback games on TV.
Yeah.
When they went into 1-2 o'clock in the morning against a Kentucky or a Tennessee when we had 9 overtimes.
Yeah, those were games, man.
You know, I've never understood the correlation between a cowbell and a bulldog, but
yeah,
I don't make the rules.
Yeah.
Again,
okay.
It's going to be a good game. Mike Leach is a good coach, but I think Sam Pittman's going to have these guys right back on track, and we're going to see an Arkansas finally an Arkansas win over the past 2 weeks.
Okay. All right. Well, we've got a hard break here at the bottom of the hour. This is Razorback Zach of Inside the Hog Pen. I'm Alan Kerr in for Dave Ellswick. We're going to go to our sponsors here, and we will be right back with Zach and everything sports right after the break. Good morning. This is Alan Kerr in for Dave Ellswick on 101.1 FM, The Answer, filling in for Dave on this beautiful Monday fall day. On the line, we've got Razorback Zach of Inside the Hog Pen talking all kinds of sports, talking about the Razorbacks this morning and that heartbreaking loss to Alabama. Not quite unexpected, but you know, you go into these things hoping for the best, and we really didn't. I think we held our own, but Alabama was absolutely triumphant in that game. We're going to pick up where we left off, Zach.
You know, one of the things, if people look at the stat sheet from this Alabama game, most people remember the 65 points that Alabama dropped on Arkansas back just a few years ago. Or let's go back even further than that and the back-to-back 52-0 years. Okay?
Yeah.
When this game got up 14-21, 28-0 this past Saturday, everybody thought, okay, well, they're going to throw in the towel. That's not the case. This team did not lay down and just take it. Because it would have been 70-80, you know, to 7, or worse, to 3-0. They made the in-game adjustments that they needed to. But when you play a team like an Alabama or a Georgia in the SEC East, they're going to be the better team because of their recruiting, because of their athleticism. We're not quite there yet. But we are in the... We are in the conversation.
So you think in the future we'll be far more competitive with Alabama and Georgia and teams like that? Let me ask you something. What, of course, everything is recruitment is the key to most anything. What do you think we need to do as Arkansas as a club to recruit these better players like Alabama and Georgia do?
Well, you know, one of the advantages that Alabama and Georgia have that Arkansas doesn't is the national championship trophies, is the NFL draft picks.
Okay. Yeah,
But Sam Pitt, there is a lot of in-state talent that Arkansas can recruit. And when Sam Pittman was hired in 2020, like I had said, He wanted to build a fence around the state of Arkansas and keep all these in-state players and go, hey, yeah, you can go to Alabama. Yeah, you can go to Georgia. But why go there when you can stay close to home and still play at one of the best places to play in the SEC? You know, Fayetteville, Arkansas as a whole was voted one of the best, if not the best place to live in the entire conference.
Well, I get that, but if these boys are going into schools and with the idea of maybe catching an NFL recruiter's eye, is Arkansas a good place for that?
Yes, in a sense that you're going to have the fundamentals to make it in the NFL. I mean, look at guys like Hunter Henry with the New England Patriots. Trey Flowers. Look, big example. Dallas Cowboys offensive lineman Jason Peters. He played under Houston Nutt and is still early, but still playing in the NFL today.
So it's possible.
It's possible. And the facilities at the University of Arkansas are next to none.
They put a lot of money in it.
They are some of the best in the conference. So, yeah, if I'm a recruit and you hear, you know, and they had recruits there Saturday, but I always say this on the show, the three most dangerous words in all of collegiate athletics, when you put them together, woo, pig, suey.
Is that right?
If you have never heard 75,000 or 20,000 inside of Bud Walton or 12,000 to 15,000 at Baum Walker Stadium call the Hogs all at once, it will send chills down your spine.
Yeah. Oh, I've been there. It's it's something to behold. And, you know, a lot of times when I travel out of state and somebody asks me about it, says, how do you call the hogs again? You know, and we'll do that for them, you know. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. It is something to behold.
And, you know, one of the best things about being a recruit is that, and again, I don't know, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't know how they recruit at the University of Arkansas. Like, I don't know what they verbally tell anybody. But as a fan looking in, you're coming to play for a team, but you're not playing for the University of Arkansas. This is what Sam Pittman tells recruits. He says, you're not coming to play for the University of Arkansas. You're playing for the whole state of Arkansas. Because every Saturday, for 12 Saturdays in the fall, the entire state rallies around the Arkansas Razorbacks.
Well, that's for sure.
We don't have a pro team in any of the major sports. The Hogs are where are our pro team.
Wow. Okay. Well, we're listening to the Razorback, Zach. We got a few minutes just before the mid-hour break. We've got, seven games left?
Yeah, seven games left, four of which are against currently ranked opponents in the top 25.
Yeah. Just off the top of your head, your prediction, how many of those games you think we're going to be able to pull out?
Optimistically, all seven.
Okay. That's optimistic. Realistically,
there's nothing wrong with going 6-1 in your last seven games.
Okay.
Nothing wrong at all, because that'll put you right back where you were last year. That'll put you in a what I call a tier two bowl, maybe even a New Year's Six bowl.
Okay.
The one game I've got circled that kind of worries me, Ole Miss.
Yeah, yeah. So you think we're going to be able to pull out Louisiana?
Oh, I think I absolutely.
Good.
I think the boot stays at home. I think the battle line, the Missouri game, I think that one will be a fun one to watch. You know, I honestly believe the only game that I'm right now worried about is number 9 Ole Miss coming to Fayetteville on November 19th.
What's November 19th? I think that's my birthday, isn't it?
You know, I think I have that written down somewhere. I'm stuck with Mom.
Thanks a lot. That one's at home then. So we've got that home field advantage.
You do, but at the same time, it all depends on the adjustments that you make and during practice leading up to that game, because you've got, like I said, you go to Starkville this week, you go to Provo, Utah for BYU next week. Yeah. They're number 16 in the country. Then you travel to Auburn, Alabama. That's always a tough place to play. And then Liberty comes to town on November 5th. And then number 25, LSU, comes to Fayetteville. And that one's always been one that Arkansas fans have circled. And then, of course, you've got number 9, Ole Miss, coming the very next week.
Yeah.
And they're 5-0 right now. So that could have a lot of implications with it when they come to town.
So Ole Miss is 5-0.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Okay. Yeah, I'd take notice of that. All right, so go ahead.
You know, going back on this game this past week, one of the things that you're looking at from and I'm going to say this, we cannot run every down. You cannot run every single play. You have a 6'4", 275 quarterback in KJ Jefferson who can throw it. Why are you continually turning and running the ball? Let him air it out. Let him throw it.
Yeah.
That was my biggest problem when it came to this Alabama team. So it'll be interesting to see the adjustments that they make in practice this week. And how they game plan for Saturday.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've reached our middle of the hour. We're on the phone with Razorback Zach. He's one of the hosts of Inside the Hog Pen. And I'm Alan Kerr, in for Dave Ellswick. We're going to be right back right after these messages. Stay tuned. We've got more sports to come in the last segment of this hour. Good morning. It's Alan Kerr, in for Dave Ellswick on the Dave Ellswick Show. We're here on the last segment of our last hour, and we're on the line with Zachary Kerr, known as Razorback Zach of Inside the Hog Pen. We are related. He is my son. So, but I can testify he is steroid free and is all about the sports. So, tell them how to get a hold of you, Zach, and how they can get your program.
Well, I will tell you, Dad, that was one of the most unique intros I've ever had. Now, you can find me on Facebook, Inside the Hog Pen. That is H-A-W-G, Inside the Hog Pen. I am a member of the 4-Star Sports Radio Network. You can find us anywhere podcasts are streamed at 4-Star Sports Media. And, of course, we've got a website, 4star.live. That's the number 4. star.live. And of course I'm on Twitter at RazorbackZach1. And I tell you, if you want to watch our live show, MC Marcus Carlson and I, every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. on the 4-Star Sports Radio Network, we have a lot of fun. We've got Razorback trivia. We have a lot of what we call squirrel moments. So if you guys just want Dad's more all about that.
Squirrel moments, okay.
Where I go off, so it's funny because I go off on little tangents on the show and everything,
yeah.
And I love every single one of our fans. Like I said, I've been doing this since 2017, and what started off as a small little Facebook Live in the corner of my first apartment has now become what it's become, and it's because of the fans that listen to the show week in and week out. I could rattle off names, but you guys know who you are. And big thank you to Wes Pruitt of 4-Star Sports Media for picking us up and taking us on their brand. I have had some of the most fun doing this show since I've started doing it this season. I know the last 2 weeks have seemed rough, Razorback fans, but trust me, it's not the end of the world. I promise.
Not the end of the world. So let's not. Let's not lose hope. Let's not lose faith. The Razorbacks are they always come back.
They do. Now again, you're probably going to lose one or two more, but that's okay.
It's a numbers game, isn't it?
It's better than the 4-20 we were dealing with a few years ago.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Okay, that's one thing that most people are like. Well, Sam Pittman's not it. Do y'all not realize we've beaten 4 ranked teams under Sam Pittman?
That's pretty good.
You've beaten Texas. I mean, he's only been here 3 years.
Yeah.
And you've beaten Cincinnati, Texas, Texas A&M, and Mississippi State.
Do you know, just off the top of your head, how long it took Lou Holtz to get to this point with the Razorbacks? He didn't start winning run off the bat either.
No, and you know, Houston Nutt, you know, that we're talking modern era here. You know, Houston Nutt had a good start. I mean, I think he was in his first 27 games. He was 20-7 in his first 27 games. Okay.
Wow.
So each coach has their own way of doing things, and.
Well, it all depends on the recruitment you've got that you've done with. You walk into a team like this, you're subject to whatever recruiting that the last guy has done, and you've got to make something. You got to make soup out of whatever you have there.
You are, but at the same time, you don't know how that last coach left the locker room, and one of Sam Pittman's one. Well, and I said it because. Our last coach was a clown, all right? He had no idea what he was doing.
Oh, that's for sure.
And it was pretty obvious. Sam Pittman, one of the first things he said when he was hired 3 years ago is he looked at the team and he says, "You didn't choose me. I chose you." This man cried in his introductory press conference because this is his dream job. This is where he wants to be. The man put a clause in his contract that he has a non-compete clause with the entire Division I football. So the only way he's leaving Arkansas is if they fire him or he retires.
Right. Right.
Because he has said over and over and over again, this is my last job.
Well, that's commitment. You know, that's absolute commitment. And you got to love somebody like that because it means he's going to give it his all.
Well, and he fights for his players. And you see the players fight for him on the field.
Yeah.
Because that game Saturday could have been
So much worse. Could have been so much worse.
But it shows you that they, the locker room right now, has that mentality of we're in it to win it. We're not playing not to lose. We're playing to win the game. And if you're a Razorback fan right now, and there are a few of them out there, if you're a Razorback fan right now, and forgive me that I'm gonna do this, but if you're tweeting at players and telling them that they're terrible, or if you're dogging this team right now, that's not what this team needs. Yes,
well,
we've gotten our butts kicked.
I don't call that a fan. I mean, that if you're gonna criticize your guys out there when they're on the field, and you're at home in your chair in front of the TV set, or even in the stands, and comfortable and warm, then you really need to rethink. Be honest with you.
Now, I will say this. Changes have to be made, whether it's at the coach. And I'm not going to say that a player change needs to be made, but a coaching change does need to be looked at from an assistant level.
Did he? I don't remember. Can you tell me tell us all? How many of the coaching staff did he swap out when he got there?
He flipped the entire staff, if I remember right. I mean, all up and down. He got two of the best coordinators at the time, and Barry Odom and Kendall Briles, respectively, for the offensive and defensive coordinators. But I'm starting to question the offensive play calling.
Okay. And why is that? Not throwing enough?
Not throwing enough, and you're playing too safe, and you're worrying too much about trick plays. When you have to get back to fundamentals, you have to learn you cannot run sideline to sideline. You cannot pass sideline to sideline.
Yeah, I can see where that would be a problem. Well, we're talking with Razorback Zach and host of Inside the Hog Pen. Tell us one more time how we can get in touch with you and how to follow your show.
So we air every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. on Inside the Hog Pen on Facebook. We also have a YouTube channel, 4-Star Sports Media, because Inside the Hog Pen is part of the 4-Star Sports Media Network. And like I said, MC and I have a blast doing our show during the week. And we've also got ITHP Game Day on Saturday mornings. We do pre- and post-game. But I'm on Twitter, at Razorback Zach, the number one. And then we have a website, 4star.live. That's the number 4star.live.
Nice. Okay, we got about a minute and a half. What can you leave us with? What kind of information can you leave us with for the upcoming week and weeks to follow?
Well, I think we pull a win out in Starkville. I'm going to go 38-31 Arkansas. And then I say we go 6-1 the rest of the season.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna throw my prediction out there. You can take it for what it's worth. I'm gonna say we're gonna do 5-2 the rest of the season, because I'm a guy that plays it safe. I hope you're right.
I can get behind that.
I hope you're right, but I'm guessing we're gonna do about 5-2. So we'll see how that comes out.
That's not bad either. That's not bad either. That's an 8-4 record. You know, that's still a bowl game. So I'll take 5-2.
All right, sir. We got 1 minute left. We have been talking with Razorback Zach of Inside the Hog Pen. This is my son, and we are related to Zachary Kerr, but he knows everything sports, and so I don't have to. So he doesn't do anything with insurance, and I don't try to tell him I do sports. So anyway,
yep, that's about it.
All right, well this is about it for me. I'm Alan Kerr in for Dave Ellswick on 101.1 FM The Answer. We'll have someone else in for him tomorrow. But until next time, everyone have a great week and stay safe out there.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.